When ChatGPT was released in November 2022, it ushered in a revolution and essentially a global arms race, reaching 100 million monthly active users within 2 months, one of the fastest adoption curves in consumer tech history. The rest, as they say, is history. Since then, in boardrooms and organizations of all types, generative AI instantly became both a shield, a weapon, and a tool. Even inside the White House, policymakers were forced to confront a stark reality. This technology carries extraordinary promise and extraordinary peril. In this episode of the Talos Security Sessions podcast, former White House advisor Diane Staley takes us behind the scenes of how governments, model creators, and security leaders are racing to close governance gaps, outpace adversaries, and prevent AI risk at a pace no one has ever seen before. I'm Steve Prentice, and this is the Talos Security Sessions podcast. To help us understand some of the implications and opportunities that AI continues to present to the world, I am privileged to have as my guest someone who has been able to observe and direct the battle from a unique vantage point, the White House. She is former White House advisor on AI and emerging tech, and she continues to play a leading role as an expert and strategist at the MIT Lincoln Laboratory. Diane, thank you so much for joining us today on the Talos Security Sessions podcast.
Well, thank you so much, Steve, for having me.
You, of course, hold a remarkable position in the cybersecurity community. From your time in the U.S. federal government, how did you see policymakers initially framing AI in cybersecurity? Was it a technical tool or a strategic asset or a systemic risk? And how have you seen that evolve?
Yeah, so generally, the Biden administration, which is the administration that I worked under during my time in government, they framed AI in terms of promise and peril. So managing the risks of AI so that we might achieve the significant benefits. And certainly AI and cybersecurity is no exception to that. At least during my time in government, we had started out from the perspective of the peril. So when ChatGPT came out, we very quickly responded by doing a study to investigate what kind of risks these new models might be posing, what kind of safeguards that the corporate community had put into place to manage those risks, as well as protect themselves from a cybersecurity perspective, protect their intellectual property, and protect themselves from potentially malicious actors. And our early work there led to commitments from the frontier model companies, voluntary commitments, and industry fora for the commercial companies to start to work together on some of those safety and security controls, such as the Frontier Model Forum. And that group has been doing a lot of leading work in thinking about AI security. And we started to think about misuse. So what are the ways that bad actors might use these new capabilities, and exactly how capable might they become in being able to conduct cyber attacks? Another accomplishment that was laid forth in the executive order on safe, secure, and trustworthy AI was the formation of the U.S. AI Safety Institute, which is now the Center for AI Standards and Innovation. They were formed in part to answer some of those questions. How do we anticipate what the risks might be from these frontier models, particularly in the area of cybersecurity? How might bad actors use these technologies? And what kind of uplift could we expect for bad actors? How much more capable can they become? And then later on, we focused more on the innovation aspects. We worked with the frontier model companies to showcase a lot of the good work that they were doing to put their technologies to use for cybersecurity. So OpenAI, for example, had created and open sourced a few examples in which they had used chatbots to help conduct security investigations. So eliminating some of the more tedious work of the cyber defenders and to share that work with the community. The DARPA AI and Cyber Challenge is another great example where we worked with the agency to uplift and promote the work that they were doing, which was essentially a research competition to demonstrate how you might employ AI to automatically detect and patch vulnerabilities, particularly in critical infrastructure. That's sort of how we try to balance both the peril and the promise.
That is interesting, especially to hear you describe the voluntary participation of organizations like OpenAI, simply because it is such a highly competitive industry, and to this day, they're still all racing to become the lead horse. So since the time that you were doing this assessment on how could this impact cybersecurity and what would the dangers be, were you surprised by what you saw from threat actors, or have the patterns of cybercriminal behavior fallen right in alignment with what you envisioned?
I've been pleasantly surprised, at least by the adherence of some of the frontier model companies to doing their due diligence in looking for evidence of malicious use in the cyber domain. So Anthropic has been a great example of publishing the details and sharing with the community when they observe malicious activity happening, reporting out exactly what they've observed, proactively blocking accounts that malicious use is coming from. OpenAI has done some of that work as well. So that's one of the bright spots, and that helps us as a community. That goes back to the notion of community defense.
And what about the bad actors themselves? Beyond innovations like prompt injection or data poisoning, were their behaviors directly targeting the known weaknesses of AI itself, or did they surprise you with sort of creativity of some sort?
I think the prompt injection area is one that's very interesting. Certainly, we've seen evidence of how brittle that the safeguards are currently, and the relative ease in which they're able to be broken, as well as the communities of bad actors sharing information with each other on how to defeat safeguards. It's not necessarily anything new, right? As you know, these communities have already been working together to share malicious code and examples like that. So it's just the same kind of behavior using a newer technology.
One thing we have observed, let's say in the private sector, is how AI is compressing work timelines. I would imagine that in the context of military and national security, these technologies must compress decision timelines dramatically. So given this speed of advancement in technology, from a policy and risk perspective, where do you see the biggest governance gaps today?
So having worked on policy initiatives for AI risk management, both in the Department of Defense as well as at the White House, the number one question that we would get as soon as we would put new policies into place was, okay, what do I actually do to fulfill this requirement? So there's a big gap between the policy and the technical implementation or the organizational implementation. And part of that is just because this is a new technology. The technologies are evolving very rapidly, and the risk management research is also evolving very rapidly. So the best practices are constantly changing. It's an area where government actors, academia, and industry are all working to try to understand what works and what doesn't and share the work with each other. And a lot of what I tried to do during my time in government was to help collect those best practices and disseminate that to the community and start to try to build the practice. There's so much research out there, but it all tends to be very much point solutions, right? A researcher works on a very narrow problem, but there's a lot of great pieces that need to be put together. And that's what I'm actually working on right now for my current research. So I would love to hear from practitioners and researchers that want to start to collect that body of knowledge and make it easy and make it usable and make it something that's accessible to the community.
What are some of the most misunderstood risks of AI in cybersecurity? I mean, those that don't perhaps show up on a traditional threat model or a compliance checklist.
So I would say this maybe isn't a risk particular to cybersecurity, but one of the most misunderstood areas right now is the idea of large language model benchmarks. That's something that as a community, we've sort of landed as a means of measuring the capability of a model and potentially predicting its future capability. There are general benchmarks and there are cybersecurity specific benchmarks, of course. We know that there are many flaws with that approach. They can be oversaturated, they can be trained to the test, or they can be biased. You know, everyone is sort of making up their own benchmark based on their particular concerns. So it's not something that is really stable at the moment. Even the way that you or the system that you use to conduct your testing could influence the results of your benchmarking. They've also been co-opted a bit as marketing by some of the companies. You know, companies sort of pick and choose the benchmarks that they want to share out whenever they release a new model. And that's an area where, you know, it's the best proxy that we have for measuring capability, but it's an area that's ripe for new thinking and new innovation.
So do you find that this is a technology that genuinely does create a level playing field between attackers and defenders? We do hear this quite a lot, that it's the first technology where we both have equal access to this evolving technology at the same time. So is this true, or do you see that there are still some asymmetries that we are underestimating, perhaps?
So that's a great question. One, there's a bit of a trade-off between observability and information sharing. You know, so certainly attackers that are using publicly available tools and models, going back to the example of the recent attack that Anthropic published information about, the fact that they planned and conducted this attack on public infrastructure means that we can see exactly what they did, right? We can see their tools, tactics, procedures. And now that means that as defenders, we can try to do the same thing and see what results we get when we're testing our own systems. I will go back to information sharing as another example. The fact that we can now, as a community, share indicators of what we're seeing happen on these platforms, indicators that an entity might be planning a malicious cyber attack, we can start to get out ahead of it, right? We can start to be more proactive in our defense, particularly as model providers. There's been some thought in the United States, it's one of the suggestions in America's AI action plan, that we might start to think about information sharing for AI companies as a sector. So there's a recommendation in the action plan to form an AI ISAC, particularly for the exchange of threat information between corporate entities.
Your experience and your research both focus a lot on federal agencies and military organizations. So when you compare this, for example, to the private sector, for corporate leaders, what lessons can they take from military or government AI risk management practices? Or what should they not copy? Are there particular guides or paths that you can share for them?
So the government and military have no-fail missions. So they take AI risk very seriously, and agencies have been doing a lot of good work in building out their approaches, their metrics, their platforms. I would encourage corporate entities to treat their AI risk management plans with the same care and build that culture of risk awareness within their organizations.
How can we translate that into corporate speak or civilian language? When we look at businesses, hospitals even, facing technology-based crimes like ransomware, there are those that see the paying of a ransom as the cost of doing business. This is not really winning, but as they will say, if it gets systems back up and running again, it's what they have to do. So is it possible to translate this ideology to private sector organizations, the notion of a no-fail mission as part of their AI strategy?
So that's a great question. I like your example, and I will build on that by highlighting the example of credit card fraud, right? It's easier to pay the cost of, you know, replacing the card rather than to prevent the card from being stolen in the first place. What I would recommend is the equivalent of preventing the card from being stolen in the first place. How do we do all the work up front to make sure that AI risks are successfully managed?
That's a great analogy, preventing the card from being stolen in the first place. This is a technology that continues to evolve on a daily basis, obviously. So the question would be how to take those preventative steps. There might not be one single clear answer, but what would a board of directors, let's say, take from that idea? Should they start by looking at this again as a cost of doing business projected against the classic pillars of risk management? I mean, AI is a highly agile threat and not the type of thing that any of us at any level are truly used to. So what kind of guidance could you offer?
So there is a lot of guidance, existing guidance out there. You know, certainly NIST and the AI Risk Management Framework is a comprehensive example of specific actions that companies can take, both from the organizational governance perspective to provide oversight of all of the activities, making sure the right policies are in place, making sure there are review practices and procedures. It also covers the technical activities that teams building products or acquiring AI systems should engage in, including correct planning upfront, making sure that your system is properly scoped, making sure AI is the right solution to the measurement, identifying your business metrics as well as your technical metrics, making sure you have a measurement plan in place, and making sure you're thinking through the risks and monitoring for those risks throughout the life cycle. There's a lot of great information out there, and that framework is intended to be quite tailorable for organizations so that organizations can pick and choose the methodologies that make the most sense for them and where they're at in their AI journey. So that, and then the other consideration is, how can you roll AI risk management into your existing cybersecurity risk management frameworks? Certainly, you know, when I was in the Department of Defense, when we first launched our policies and our toolkits, we heard from our cybersecurity risk management teams that they didn't necessarily want to reinvent the wheel, right? They didn't want to have a second process that they had to go through. So to the extent where you can harmonize your AI risk management practices with your cybersecurity or other risk management procedures, making sure that you're treating the unique parts of your AI risk management process in the context of what you might be doing already, to the extent where you can realize some synergies there. That's something to be considering also.
You mentioned NIST before, and of course you were very involved with them as well. What are some other resources people might want to turn to in order to keep in touch with what's going on?
So certainly NIST and the Center for AI Standards and Innovation, which falls under NIST, have been very active in putting out draft guidance to the community for comment. There have been a number of publications in the last few months that are maybe in their early stages, but are indicators of what's to come. One I'm excited about in particular that I'd like to highlight is a new draft standard for a control layer for cybersecurity of AI systems that's coming out of NIST. This is intended to supplement their existing cybersecurity guidance with controls specific just cybersecurity AI systems, which to me indicates closer coordination between the cybersecurity and the AI parts of the house, maybe puts more responsibility onto cyber defenders for AI risk management. It's, again, very early, but it's a great step forward in terms of practical, actionable guidance. And there certainly are opportunities for anyone in the public to comment on those, but companies that have expertise, certainly their perspectives could be incorporated there.
One thing that stands out in my mind currently is that we have been focusing on organizations taking responsibility for their own cyber defense, of course, their AI-based defense systems. But what about the creators? You mentioned earlier about a quite decent level of cooperation and information sharing amongst the actual creators like OpenAI, but where do they stand in terms of responsibility for some of these threats or some of the ways in which AI is being used by threat actors and cybercrime groups? I know that Anthropic has some particular things to say about this. When police forces or financial institutions, for example, act on information that has been generated by generative AI, which turns out to be a hallucination, is it for the manufacturers to say, hey, not our problem. You should have done your research on the citations in the actual response. This might, again, from your perspective, be a low-level example, but it's the kind of thing that people do experience. They might say, in response, this was a hallucination created by a program that we have been essentially forced to use. So what responsibility do the manufacturers have, if any, or should they have, in terms of accountability for these kinds of criminal or simply hallucinatory actions?
So that's a great question. I'm not a lawyer or a legal expert, but I will point you to a similar example in cybersecurity about liability. So certainly, if you're familiar with Kali Linux, which is an open source variant of Linux operating system that's intended for penetration testing and offensive cyber activity, they have in their terms of use, right, that you know, if you're using this tool to illegally access a network, they are not responsible. And certainly, you know, going back to the recent example of Anthropic and the use of their tools to generate a malicious cyber attack, you know, do the same kinds of legal protections apply there? You know, certainly they say in their terms of use, right, that they are not responsible for illegal activity taking place on their platforms. So, again, I'm not a legal expert. That's where I would start my investigation.
Well, Diane, it has been a wonderful experience seeing the world of AI through the lens of someone who has worked in the highest echelons of security and power and who continues to be at the forefront of research and policy to this day. It's been an enormous honor to spend this time with you. So as we close, is there anything else that you would like to add? Any additional recommendations or guidance?
So one policy challenge that I think I'd like to mention, there has been a steady call from the research community on safe harbor protections for AI red teaming. as well as responsible disclosure procedures for any findings of vulnerabilities in AI systems. It hasn't quite been clear if red teaming falls under the existing protections that are afforded to cybersecurity researchers. And I know the community has been calling for that to be changed. Mm-hmm. The Hacking Policy Council has put forth some voluntary recommendations for companies to adopt voluntarily, but in the interest of community defense and making AI systems more secure, that might be one policy consideration worth mentioning.
That is a great organization, and one that defense professionals and the people they work for should definitely pay attention to. It's part of the Center for Cybersecurity Policy and Law, I believe, and I know people can get to it just by searching for the Hacking Policy Council, but we'll also put the full URL in the show notes. So Diane, once again, this has been such a treat and a genuine honor. I thank you for joining me here today on the Talis Security Sessions podcast.
Thank you, Steve. It's been a pleasure.
Just a reminder as we close that Diane is genuinely interested in hearing from practitioners and researchers who want to start to collect that body of knowledge for risk management research to make it easy and usable and accessible to the community. A link to her LinkedIn profile is available in the show notes, and of course you can reach her that way. Remember, if you like what you hear, be sure to leave a review on your podcast platform of choice, and also subscribe and tell a friend or a colleague or a client or all of them about the Talis Security Sessions podcast, not just for the next one, but for our archive of highly useful and relevant past conversations. And we will be back again very soon with another episode and another discussion on the topics that you need to know about to successfully carry on in the business of information security. Until then, I'm Steve Prentice. Thanks for listening.